Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Michelin Wiper Blades.
Today's opening tip, D'Angelo Russell's game-saving block on Jimmy Butler, 1.2 seconds left in a one-point game. Says the Wolves were down 12 with about 4 minutes to go. This has got to be a huge morale booster for Minnesota, right?
Absolutely. Big play by D'Angelo Russell to meet him at the rim for a game winner on the road against a very good basketball team. That has to be something that gets them going.
Not just against a very good basketball team, against Jimmy Butler.
That's
your
tough.
Minnesota.
General soreness.
Right? General, there you go.
Yeah.
General soreness. Not playing because of?
General soreness.
There you go. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, alongside our NBA senior writer, Zach Lowe, former head coach, Memphis and New York, Mr. David Fizdale.
Thank you guys for being there.
Coming up, we're going to talk about the recent struggles in Miami. The Heat have now lost 7 of their last 9 games after that collapse at home against the Wolves. Is this a blip or a trend? We will look into that. First, though, we begin today's show with one of the hottest players in the association, Jason Tatum. I loved it. We had other NBA players chiming in all over social last night, watching on TV as Tatum scored 33 points and grabbed 11 rebounds to lead the Celtics to a 114-103 road win over the Jazz. Tatum said after the game, quote, "This was big for our team. This is a tough place to play. It's a great way to end a road trip. We could have made excuses on a back-to-back, but we didn't." And guys, look at this. Over the last 5 games, Tatum averaging 35 points, 58% shooting from the floor, 55% from three. So, coach, is Tatum's recent tear changing your perception of how good the Celtics as a whole can be this season?
You know what? I already thought the Celtics was a dangerous team from the beginning, but you're watching a kid who every year at this time of year takes a huge jump, by the way. This is what he does. And to me, if he could continue that trend of taking those kind of jumps, I would not want to deal with the Celtics in the playoffs.
It can't not change your perception of the Celtics. Like this player, this guy, this is a top 10 player in the NBA. Like this.
Absolutely.
Jason Tatum playing like this can be the best player on a championship team. And like, he's not going to shoot 58% and 55%, but.
He might, Zach.
It
you
can't.
Don't know.
Right. They were already, in my opinion, the most dangerous threat to Milwaukee in the East. And this has only cemented that. Toronto's right there, but this puts Boston clearly ahead to me.
He looks like a guy that works on his game. He is a technician. You watch his footwork. You watch how efficient he is with his movements. He's a young kid that just continues to get better. And I just think they are talent deep at a lot of different positions. And so any given night, the Celtics can beat you in a lot of different ways.
When you dig into player development, I feel like so many times we'll see a guy take a leap from work he does over the summer, right? Guy comes back
right at
the beginning of his third year. Or we'll see different benchmarks where a guy, you're saying, oh, he came back a little different, lost weight, worked on this, worked on that. Why do you think someone like Tatum is someone who develops, as you said, it seems to be during seasons?
Because I think the games teach him things. I think he's a student, so I think he's the kind of guy that after he plays a game, he goes back and he watches his own film alone. He doesn't wait for coach to come in and say, hey, we got to watch this. I guarantee you he's a student of the game, and he continues to pick away at his opponents and figure out, how are they defending me? Where are they trying to force me to? Mm-hmm. And you can see every time he plays against a team, he just explodes against them the next time he plays them.
I also don't think it's 100% a coincidence that this just super rise started almost right when he got named to the All-Star team. I think that took some pressure off him. I think I think he was pressing a little bit before that. I think it was important to him. It was important to Jaylen Brown. And then I think now, okay, I belong. That's off my back. I'm ready to go. I don't think it's the reason, but right. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Is there a player you would comp him to in today's NBA with the way he is now as opposed to where he was at the start of the season?
Oof, in today's NBA, I mean, I think eventually he will be able to average 5 or 6 assists a game. Like, that's the next step for him. Mm-hmm. And when you look at scoring wings who average like 28 and 5 and defend and the best player and are the best player on a team, you start to think of some pretty names I'm not ready to kind of say.
Not yet, but I tell you what, you can see that he is emerging as a big time player. And again, I'm telling you, you watch enough of these guys, you can tell the guys that really put in the time. And the way that he's improved as a three-point shooter, the way he gets to his spots to hit big shots, he ripped my heart out for one of those losses. I know that. And you could tell he's a guy, it's really important to him.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about one of Jason's teammates, Kemba Walker. Kemba and I sat down during the All-Star break. We spoke about his first season in Boston, playing for Kobe as he is these days, and just how high the Celtics is. How high the ceiling is for the Celtics, or if the ceiling is the roof, or if the ceiling is the Celtics, or one of those different things. Anyway, take a look.
Good move from Walker, and he puts it in. Walker broke ankles, too much sauce.
And Kemba Walker is officially a Boston Celtic.
You played your whole career in one place. You are halfway through your first season somewhere else. What is different about playing in Boston?
It's definitely different. I think the biggest difference is the expectation. And they expect big things. And that's kind of what I wanted to be a part of. Now, our fan base is pretty incredible. But they just get us going each and every night.
You were going into a situation with the Celtics where things just hadn't worked out last season. Mm-hmm. And you were specifically replacing the guy that had originally been pegged to be their franchise player for the next few years. That is a lot to walk into. What has your approach been?
I never really thought about it, actually.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I just know what kind of guy I am. You know, my personality. I know, you know, I can get guys to kind of gravitate towards me. And, you know, I think I'm a fun guy to be around.
You and Kawhi Leonard, just fun, two fun guys?
Definitely. You know, I just kind of be myself. And these guys, you know, allow me to be myself, which is probably the coolest thing about it.
You wear number 8. Because of Kobe Bryant. How much of this season to you is going to be about looking down at your chest and thinking about the guy that you've tried to model your career on?
Now, that number means even more. So, you know, every time I step on the court, you know, I just want to give 100%, you know, for him. And that's my goal for the rest of the year, and the rest of my career.
Some guys who had 8 or 24 said they didn't want to wear it anymore as a way of sort of honoring him and retiring it. But then there were guys like you who said, no, my way of honoring him was wearing it. Yeah. What made you make that decision?
I had to talk about it, you know, with some close people, you know, in my circle. I definitely thought about giving it up, but then I think Kobe would want me and allow me, you know, to wear it. We want to keep his legacy going. I know a few of us has kept it. We're all just going to go out there and do what we can to play as hard as possible for Kobe.
There's a franchise with no direction. It's a mess. There is nobody to blame but Michael Jordan. Absolutely nobody.
You have played on a team where it was just a scrap to try to get into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it feel like to know, I mean, you're all but guaranteed at this point of playing in the postseason.
Yeah, I know. It's different. It's different, you know, playing every night, you know, knowing that you're playing for something. It's really cool. And, you know, that's why I wanted to be a part of the Celtics.
What is the ceiling for this team?
I think it's really high. You know, I think we can go as far as we want to. You know, we just got to stay locked in. We have to stay on top of our games. You know, stay together just like we've been doing all year. We've, you know, had times where we hit some adversity, but we never stopped. And, you know, because of that, you know, I think it can take us really far.
Kemba Walker, as bullish on the Celtics as the two of you and their chances. Yeah. Thank you so much to Kemba for taking the time to chat with me. Now, he has missed the last 4 games with a sore left knee. He had it drained. We got some real news on that today. Danny Ainge told 98.5 The Sports Hub about Kemba's injury. Quote, "We're being very cautious with Kemba. We feel like we need Kemba to be his best self, and right now, we don't think that he can sustain what he wants to do. But we are confident that his knee is going to be fine." So, Coach, there's a couple different things to unpack there, right? So, A, he says this isn't a long-term injury, but he does say that we're going to be very cautious. How cautious do you think they should be?
I think they should be very cautious. I think the Celtics are a legitimate contender. I really do. And if Kemba Walker is healthy, they have a much better chance, obviously. And so if I'm the Celtics, I'm taking my time with that thing. I'm making sure they stay in shape. But at the same time, we're not aggravating it.
They can be as cautious as they can afford to be very cautious. They have 4 really high-level wings or ball handlers, yes. And then Marcus Smart can fill in sometimes, become a 5th one. They play well when and if one of those guys is injured, so there's no rush. But to Danny's point, to win the title, to win four playoff series, you're going to need all of those guys to be at their best. That's how hard it is. So you got to be cautious now in hopes that he can be ready later.
I asked him in that conversation, hey, you're coming into the situation where it was a mess last year, right? And the guy he was replacing was a direct one-to-one of the guy who left, who was supposed to be, when he came in on that trade from Cleveland, their franchise player for the coming years, and the pressure on him. Zach, how do you think that he has been able to integrate and power this team in a way that he was coming in Kyrie's place?
Because he's played a little differently than Kyrie. He's a much more sort of decisive north-south driver. Kyrie likes to dance with ball. That's fine. Like, Kyrie gets things done. But when you have all of these other wings who want the ball, just his willingness to make quicker decisions, get off the ball, get it back, has empowered everyone. Like, Tatum is running twice as many pick and rolls as last season. But to me, the interesting thing about Kemba going forward when he comes back is Jason Tatum has established himself. Like, all of that mess last season, that was a mess about we don't know who the guy is and who gets touches. Jason Tatum is the guy. That's clear. And I think that's actually every contender needs that, right?
Yeah, you do. I think Jason Tatum is now establishing a pecking order.
But don't you think Kemba's going to be fine with that?
He'll be fine.
Absolutely. I don't see him as the kind of player who, if he's out and then another guy really asserts himself, Kemba's going to come back and there's going to be attitude problems or there's going to be locker room division. Kemba's point in that interview, he goes, oh, I'm a fun guy.
No, but you have to change. You just, there are subtle, like, everyone gets 2% less, he gets 2%, whatever it is. You just have to sort of evolve that.
But I think that's where those assists are going to come from that you brought up earlier about Tatum, where Tatum now can make plays. Kemba Walker is a big-time shooter off the ball, a playmaker, a second playmaker off the ball, and Tatum can find him on some of those plays and get him some easy baskets.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about the team that lost last night in Utah. What exactly needs to change for the Jazz? Because they have given up four straight. Zach Lowe has a few suggestions. It's like a suggestion box. You better get them during this break.
Okay, I gotta get ready.
The producers, you have a whole suggestion box for the Jazz. First, though, time for our distant replay from this date in 2004, featuring our friend Baron Davis.
BD!
5 second differential shot.
Look out. Oh, that's neighborhood right there. Baron from the neighborhood. Oh, man, did he have some boosts.
Sorry, J.O. J.O. watches the jump also, so I'm counting him out. Sorry, J.O.
Hey. Jermaine.
Show's up.
The Jump is presented by Michelin Silicone Wiper Blades. Designed for extreme performance and lasts two times longer.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or make.
It's a make or miss league.
Show them, CJ. Make composure. All right, take a look, guys.
Realize what's important, what my role is right now. I think as a young player, that hurt.
Dude, Mo Wagner taking that ball to the head like a G. No, he didn't even, he just was sort of like, yeah, that hurt.
That
no
is,
reaction.
That's so on target that I feel like someone hit him
on
purpose.
Got a little volleyball in him.
I wouldn't put it past this Wizards team.
They're for sure.
No,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
In a good way. Like, they're a fun.
Absolutely.
It's not like, you know.
With teammates like that.
I just like the matter of fact that hurt.
That hurt. No, he was just like, zzz,
hey, kept going.
Line. Anyway, shout out to you, Mo. Very well done. Miss Balance. Check out Colin Sexton putting Josh Richardson on skates and just dropping him.
Do we think it's worse to be crossed up
or dunked on? This is a debate we've been having all week.
Only the crossover is only good if you make the shot. Which
right.
he did.
Yes.
I said a lot of guys do that move and then they don't finish it.
Yeah, then we don't even show it.
And a lot of those sometimes that you would look at the replay and like people's feet got tangled up.
Right.
It's not quite as devastating as it looks.
No, and
that
also,
one is
like dunked on bad. That's pretty bad.
Okay, but at least when you get dunked on, you are ostensibly trying to play defense. You are doing something positive.
Well, same here. So sliding his feet.
I mean, would you call that playing defense?
Yes.
When you get
trying to
cut him off.
To the other side. Make improvisation. Goran Dragic throwing it up for Derrick Jones Jr. Look at this body control.
That's completely ridiculous.
This is insane what this guy can do.
If I just have 15 inches of that vertical.
You're dunk contest champion. And look, you could have your issues with that specific dunk contest and Aaron Gordon getting hosed and everything that happened, but you cannot tell me that is not one of the best dunkers in the NBA.
Oh, for sure.
Airplane mode.
Absolutely.
Like,
look at that.
That's
Look at that.
All the stuff he can do every time he does this, and especially I like when he's above and then just kind of throws it down into the rim.
Freakish
athlete.
So
high.
Oh, oof.
He is a freak.
Bodmer's like, he's a thrunker.
He's going at Rudy Gobert.
And he goes and gets everyone.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. He goes and gets everyone.
Miss Strategy, Bradley Beal, coming off his back-to-back 50-point-plus games heading into last night. So the Nets pulled out the old box and won on him, Coach. He still dropped 30 points, had 5 rebounds, 5 assists. I guess when Nick Nurse did it in the finals, it was a sign of respect, right?
So yeah, I think it goes both ways. You're disrespecting the other 4 guys, and you're respecting the 1 guy.
It was a little of both. A little of both. Nick Nurse did it in the finals when KD was hurt, and then Klay was hurt, too. So,
but you got to make somebody else on Washington beach.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to, but sure.
Hey, work for
did
Coach
one of those
Nurse.
Here. There we go. All right, let's talk about the struggling Jazz. They did, as we talked about at the top of the show, lose their 4th straight game last night. They were 4-6 over their last 10. And before last night's game, there was some lineup gymnastics. So there were reports before the game of Mike Conley moving to the bench for Royce O'Neal. But then shortly before tip, the Jazz announced Joe Ingles would in fact move from starter to 6th man. Now, Quinn Snyder spoke about all the roster changes after the game. He said, Joe has not started. Royce has not started. Mike has not started. These lineups and these decisions are always fluid. All right, so A, do you buy any of that? And Zach, what is your suggestion box of what needs to change for Utah for them to be the threat in the West that they think they should be?
Well, I do buy all that because Quinn has said many times, I think starting decisions are overblown, and he's right that all those guys have come off the bench at one point or another. I think personally that the initial, well, first of all, yesterday is a mess. Mm. Second of all, I think the first decision to try Mike Conley off the bench is the right one. Joe Ingles off the bench just hasn't worked. Their best lineup has been the alternative version where Mike Conley is coming off the bench and Joe Ingles is starting.
Right.
They're just the Jazz. I think Tim McMahon nailed this yesterday. You know it when you see it, when a team has an identity.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They're caught between different kinds of identities, and I think that lineup change would help them at least offensively figure out what they're trying to be. Defensively, they just haven't been good enough.
And Coach, you coach Mike Conley in Memphis. What can he do to fit in better there? Because it has been, and look, he's had injuries, but still, it has been not the fit we expected.
I think what Zach said is right. I think the best thing for them to do would be to bring Mike Conley off the bench, let him go against backup point guards, still get him about 25 to 27 minutes a night with different lineups. But I would say bring him off the bench, and some nights he finishes for you.
I was going to say, would you close with him?
Depends on how it's going. Right. But I know that allows you to start bigger. You can do more things with versatility in the starting lineup. And then you can put Mike in a situation where he's better than the guy that he's going against.
Knowing him the way you do, how do you think that he can also just personally kind of deal with all of this?
If anybody can do it, it's Mike Conley.
Yep.
Mike Conley is the class of this league. He's a teammate first before anything. He's one of the most egoless guys I've ever coached. So if anybody would make a sacrifice to help the team, and to help coach make these kind of decisions, it'll be Mike Conley.
And legit interested in winning. Every time I talk to him, it's always
for
about
sure.
Team first. And
that's
so
it.
I feel like, you know, as long as if they start rolling, it seems like he would be happy.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
And I like Royce O'Neal going back into the starting lineup. It just makes them a little bigger, a little rangier. And like
without
him, they're just a little like, when their players are running at you and you're shooting, it doesn't like freak you out. But
yeah.
They're a little bigger with him.
And you got Rudy Gobert behind all of those guys who now you got a big perimeter, a big shot blocking center in the back. Your defense can get back to where it's shown it can be.
All right. So Quinn Snyder, I know you're a really accomplished coach. You've got accolades. You've got awards. But, you know, maybe follow Zach Lowe's
Quinn will figure out. Quinn doesn't need any help. I voted Quinn Coach of the Year 2 years ago. He doesn't need any help.
He'll be fine.
Coming up, we'll be talking about the Rockets. They are on a 5-game winning streak. Is that a blip or a trend? Stay tuned to find out. This is The Jump.
You're watching The Jump, presented by Michelin Wiper Blades.
Brilliant performance from Jason Tatum.
Look at me.
Are you kidding me?
They came to see a show.
Our next NBA Saturday primetime game. Oh, yes, this is going to be a good one. The Rockets head out to Boston to face the Red Hot Celtics. Our coverage tips with a jump. 8 o'clock Eastern, we are your pregame show on ABC. And welcome back. We are now joined by our front office insider, Amin Al-Hassan. And with you, you bring a new game.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's time to say, is it a blip or is it a trend? We're going to give you some recent streaks. You would tell us, is it a blip or part of a larger trend? So first up, the Houston Rockets, also red hot, won their fifth straight game last night, just crushed the Grizzlies by 28 points. James Harden dropped 30. Russell Westbrook led all scorers with 33 points in the win. So let me see it, gentlemen. A blip or a trend this streak? Ooh, all the way around. I mean, yep. give us a go here.
All right, so a couple of things. The small ball lineup does two things. One, it frees Russell Westbrook. It clears the paint. I remember when I was a video coordinator for the Suns and Mike D'Antoni was our coach, we get a new player in. The first thing we do is show him possession after possession after possession. What do you notice? The paint is empty.
Sure.
We keep it empty because we want Steve and Amari to have all the room to operate. Mm-hmm. In this case, they're doing the same thing. They're keeping the paint empty so that James and Russ can operate. And Russ in particular, when there's no center on the floor, his true shooting percentage is north of 61%. So they knew they get a much more effective Russell Westbrook when they space the sure. floor like that. And then the other part about it is when P.J. Tucker and Robert Covington are on the floor, they outscore opponents by something like 20 points per 100 possessions. This is not a fluke.
And Houston is a team that bases a lot of what they do and their decision-making on those analytics. So they looked at those numbers before they made that trade. And I think that what you're starting to see now is a team that's starting to gel after the trade. I think it's definitely a trend from the standpoint of look at who they've beaten that time. They beat the Lakers.
Yep.
They beat the Mavericks.
Yep.
Utah, I think Boston. So, you know, they beat some pretty dang good teams during that stretch. And it looks like they're just really starting to figure it out.
Yeah, the Rockets are really good. Trend. That's it.
You know, the other thing they're doing that we talked about a couple of weeks ago that they must do is they're turning teams over.
Right.
They're really getting a lot of points off of turnovers, and they're not just dependent on the half-court three-point shot right now.
Well, that's the way they're going to make up for the fact that rebounding,
speed.
They have struggled as expected. But if you're winning the turnover differential by, like, plus five every game, it doesn't matter.
I talked to James about that a couple of days ago, and he was like, yeah, we know. We know that number is not going to be great. It's that if you make up for it in all of the other numbers. I am really excited about this game on Saturday. I think we're going to see a lot of rubber meat in the road.
High scoring.
Be good. I want to move on to Miami. The Heat lost at home to the Wolves last night without Karl Anthony Towns. The Heat have now lost 7 of its last 9. So, Fizz, you know this organization as well as anyone. Is this a blip or a trend?
I'm probably a homer, but still, I think it's a blip.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a blip.
We got some disagreement. All right, so make your case.
Well, one, 7 of those games are with the new guys that they're trying to implement.
Mm-hmm.
4 of them, Jimmy Butler had missed. I think they're just trying to figure everything out right now. Again, once that team comes together and they really start to click, you're going to see a really good, solid, tough defensive basketball team that can play up and down the floor. I think they'll be dangerous down the stretch.
That sounds like a guy who used to get his paychecks.
Blip.
You're going blip also.
Blip. For all the reasons he said. They had people miss games. They're integrated. They had their best player miss games.
I'm not saying it's not a blip, but that was a very professional Heat Nation
lifer.
Answer.
But I got you some evidence behind
that's
it.
Good.
You know?
Every team is going to go, I guess other than the Bucks, is going to go through blips like this when you have players in and out of the lineup.
Yes.
I do think it's trend-ish because only in the sense that I do think they were and are now more clearly a step behind Toronto and Boston.
So for me, the problem started before the trade. That's right. All those reasons are accurate. But if you look back, probably around January 1, this team started having problems. One, the defensive efficiency is slipping. They're not defending with the same kind of fervor and energy they had earlier in the year. The other thing, the three-point shooting, which was elite, elite, elite,
yes.
right. now has come back down to earth to still really good,
yep.
but that's the difference. That can be the difference a lot of times between we're winning these games and we're losing them.
I think at the end of the day, the biggest key for them, especially offensively, is going to be can they make enough plays? Do they have enough playmakers, guys that can break you down off the dribble, make a play to make somebody else better? Do they have enough of that in their arsenal to get over the hump?
Well, look, and here's the other thing to remember. They lost that game last night in the last 2 seconds.
Right?
Yep. Could have easily gone the other way. So,
but it's a game that should not come down to the last 2 seconds.
And they blew a big lead again. And the fourth quarters have been, for whatever reason of shooting, as Amin said, their defense has slipped to the middle of the pack. Like, you can't blow these fourth quarter leads against
but I'm telling you,
bad teams.
If you go back and watch those fourth quarters, teams switch a lot more in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. They start flattening you out. You got to be able to break a guy down one-on-one and go make a play. And I think that's going to be the thing that decides for them if they're going to be good or not.
I mean, you talk about the energy on defense. Do you know what's going to get that energy back up to elite level?
Scoring.
If they play Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs, I can guarantee you that. Next up, Tampa. Paul George. Yeah. He scored 11 points, but it wasn't a win over the Suns last night. The thing is, he has scored 11 or fewer points in each of his last four games. Mm. So, guys, hold up your signs. Is this a blip or a trend? Where are we going? There we go. Blipping. Oh, yeah, all blipping. Just blippity blip, blip, yeah. Blip. You guys are like work at a hospital. What do you got?
Well, I mean, I think one is his health. Like he hasn't been 100% healthy, and that factors in. We also know that, much like we just saw about the Miami Heat, the Clippers have been dealing with a lot of lineup juggling there. But this is something I think is going to get figured out by the time we get to the playoffs.
Four games is by definition a blip. Or at the very least, blip-ish. Okay. It can't be a trend in four games, especially with the health issues. He's been in and out of the lineup a little bit. Paul George is Paul freaking George.
Right.
This is
I was going to say, he's a professional scorer, and his coach is one of the best offensive minds in the game. They're going to figure it out. A lot of it is just them playing basketball together and getting chemistry and rhythm, getting them some easy baskets. You only get easy baskets is when you're used to playing with a guy. Mm-hmm. And you get back cuts and things like that. That's chemistry. And so I just think it's just a matter of time down the stretch that they play enough minutes together and all of a sudden you'll see him explode.
I'm encouraged also, like, put the points aside. I'm encouraged by the defense. In the last two games, I was at that Memphis game.
Oh, they locked down.
They came in the first 12 minutes and were like, oh, you think we haven't been the
problems?
Team that we thought
right.
we could be? Here you go. Yeah. You're not scoring any baskets for a long time. And it was like, woo.
Yes, pretty good. Also, producer Danny, please note from Zach's last answer, we need blip, trend, or blip-ish to be an option on these signs.
Blend.
Let's go over to the Suns because former number one overall pick DeAndre Ayton has turned it up in the month of February, averaging 22 points, 3 rebounds a game. All right, so Zach, remember, this is a player very near and dear to all the Arizona guys on our staff's heart. Producer Danny, our researcher Michael.
Did they
Schwartz,
all chip in?
Producer Aton.
On that double?
Are you saying,
works up.
Is this a blip or a trend? Look at that. Aw, making the production staff happy. Why?
Look, no one ever doubted his ability to score and rebound. He's going to put up numbers. He's good. He's got amazing hands. He can score in a lot of different ways. And to me, the most impressive thing is from where he came into the league till now, defensively, he has made huge, huge strides. Now, I wouldn't say he's like good yet, but he's trending exactly the way you would want him to be. And that is the more important side of the ball. This other stuff, we know he can do this stuff.
Yeah, and I just think that as that team grows, you're going to see him get better and better, and a lot of that is going to be because of his improvements. But this is definitely a trend. This kid's a big-time talent. Just like he said, all of the different skill sets that you need to be a scorer in this league. We knew he could rebound, but he is making some big strides defensively.
And that's the big thing for me is can he make winning basketball plays, right? And that doesn't always show up in the box score. I know he can put up box score numbers. He does that whenever he plays. That's not a big thing, but it's the difference between being – an Al Horford versus a Hassan Whiteside, right? One guy is a box score stuffer. One guy is
a lot of differences between those two players.
I'm just saying, but if I gave you their numbers, you'd be like, oh, this guy's way better.
Right.
But you know from a basketball IQ standpoint that Al Horford brings things that wins games and wins playoff rounds. And so that's the next evolution for him is how can he get better at that stuff?
I also nobody wants a box score stat stuffer, but I do like the pressure that having these numbers takes off him. Because this is a guy who heard for his entire rookie year, oh, you're not Luka Doncic, right? So did the Suns
make a mistake?
For a while.
You say he's going to hear that for the rest of his career.
I understand, but I mean, I want to think if you're this young man, right? First you heard that, then there was so much pressure on him, like, man, he's got to muscle up. Man, he's got to get bigger. He's got to get more forceful. And what happened to him at the beginning of this season? He was suspended for using a PED masking agent. So I can only connect those dots and say that he felt pressure to do what everybody was in his ear to do. Now, he obviously didn't do it the right way. He has apologized for what happened with him and how he let down the team. I'm not bringing that up for a negative reason. I'm bringing it up for a positive that I get it. I get what happens when these guys hear all of the noise around them. And I hope that in this case, putting up these kinds of numbers, 22 points a game, 13 rebounds a game, people will kind of get off his back a little bit and let him develop as a player.
And again, it's a guards league at the end of the day. So most centers aren't going to put up these crazy numbers like they used to back in the day. Every now and then you see a center have a big game. Mm. But ones that don't shoot threes as well, like he doesn't shoot a ton of threes, you're not going to see crazy numbers out of him. But I do think you can see a consistent double-double coming from this kid throughout his career.
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we're going to talk about Joel Embiid. Shoulder injury last night. Sixers get blown out by the Cavaliers. And we get an update on Joel's condition. We'll talk about how worried these guys are about Philadelphia. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today. Our NBA writers teamed up like a super team on the ESPN app to debate whether LeBron can catch Giannis in the MVP race.
No question.
Check out what they said during the break.
Yeah.
Our NBA Friday doubleheader right here on ESPN tips off Eastern. Giannis and the Bucks.
We got one.
Hosting the Thunder. That should be good. And then the Nuggets take on Kawhi. And the Clippers are covering the games with
NBA that one.
Countdown. 7 o'clock Eastern.
Can't wait.
That's a good one.
All right. So Joel Embiid left last night's game against the Cavaliers in the first quarter, was ruled out with a left shoulder sprain. Now, he's slated to undergo an MRI today, but Woj reports he is out tonight against the Knicks, and more evaluation on that left shoulder is ongoing. Let's look at last night's game, though. The Cavaliers beat the Sixers by 14 points. So, Zach, with Embiid playing just 8 minutes, Ben Simmons also out, are you worried about the Sixers?
I would be worried about literally any team in NBA history without its two best players.
Okay.
So, yes. Long term, I mean, we'll have to see how the injuries progress. But obviously, if either one of these guys is damaged going into the playoffs, they're in huge, huge trouble.
But I think it's before that. Because, by the way, you guys have been talking about the depth of the Celtics. So, obviously, if the Celtics lost whoever their two best players at the time were, it wouldn't be good for Boston. But they could sustain that a little bit better.
Right.
For Philadelphia, they are such tentpoles of what they do. And with Philadelphia, the other story going on right now is, will they get home court in the playoffs?
Yes.
And what will their seeding be? This is one of the best teams in the NBA at home. It is one of the worst teams of any playoff team on the road.
Worst among all teams.
Right?
So 9-21
now. The difference between do you have to win on a game on the road or not to get out of the first round, it seems ridiculous for a team that we talked about at one point with title aspirations, but it's very hard for them, Fizz, to even win a game on the road.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of elements to the Sixers team. We were worried about the Sixers before the injuries, right? Mm-hmm. There was all of the other talk about Joel and Ben and can they get along. Now, I think with Embiid's injury history, you got to be concerned with that and hoping that Ben Simmons isn't as bad as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I think is what you talked about, the home court advantage. This team is a half a game back from Miami right now. This is a bad time for them to sustain these kind of injuries if they're trying to get home court advantage.
Yeah, yeah, Miami, Philly, Indiana have now gotten very close
together.
Looks
like you got the standing
it's bunched up. It's all bunched
up. We talk about 9-21. These are your roommates, the Knicks.
the road record. What you're talking about.
Like they have a road record that's similar to the Knicks, the Cavs, the Hawks.
The Knicks are 9-21 on the road,
like
exactly.
They are bad it can be. So home court advantage is more important than probably than any other team in the conference. But I want to talk about something from last night. Embiid plays less than 8 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. My man Tobias Harris only got 13 shots. As a not only a max player, but an offensive talent in this league, that is unacceptable. He only gets 12, 13 shots. Shake Milton shot more than he did. And that's not a knock on Shake. I'm glad that he got aggressive.
Is that on Tobias or is that on scheming or what is it?
Part of it is Tobias. I believe if you're a scorer like Tobias is, you don't need people to pump you up and turn you.
Right.
You the lights should go on. Oh, Embiid's out? Give me the rock. I'm shooting 30 times tonight.
Because my team needs me. Because my team needs me.
Well, and he wants to, too, because that's who he is, and he hasn't had that opportunity because of, Embiid and Simmons and the spacing and all that stuff. But then the other part of it also, I got to put something on Brett Brown. Once you see he's not being aggressive, you shouldn't have to tell him, but at some point you got to tell him. You got to communicate that to him.
See, that's why I love sitting up here with you guys. You just assume Coach didn't tell him. Coach may have told him to be aggressive, and he just didn't end up being aggressive. See, that's how coaches get shot down by you guys.
I said nothing.
He may have been in that huddle and drew up three or four plays for him and said, Tobias, you got to go now. You got to be aggressive. Sometimes it just doesn't click in, and I guarantee you if you go through that game and see how many times – Tobias had the ball in his hands and could have been aggressive. I guarantee you he passed up on opportunity.
Dylan Brooks took 26 shots last night. Dylan Brooks. Good player.
Did I have to tell him to do it?
I don't know. I'm going to have to figure
it out. Trust me, I coached Dylan in Memphis.
Probably not.
I never had to tell Dylan to be aggressive.
That
ever.
Is why Memphis wanted to hang on to that Brooks as opposed
and that
to
Marshawn. Oh, man. Marshawn.
I'm not the one who made that distinction. They did. There you go. I want to talk about the other side of that, though, because the Cavs are 3-1 since J.B. Bickerstaff took over head coaching duties for John Beilein, who resigned last week. So, Fizz, look, J.B. was their fourth coach in a year and a half. Mm. That is an insane level of instability for that organization. But, well, for anyone, but even for them, is what I was going to say. But JB, look, 3-1 from his first four games, and he's someone who's experienced, taken over a midseason. He's done it before. Do you think that this is just a honeymoon phase of a new coach, or that this is something that speaks to him in the way he's leading this team?
One, it speaks to him in the way he's leading the team. I mean, you never want to see a coach get fired, obviously, with Coach Beilein, but
he
JB.
He didn't get fired. He left himself.
Well, however you want to call it. Well, whatever you want to say, but. JB's been through this, obviously, after coaching with me in Memphis and in Houston as well. JB understands how to take over a team mid-drift, and I think this young team fits his personality. The one team they lost to was a good Miami team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can play at a 3-1 level throughout the rest of the year because they are a young team, but I do think they'll play consistently hard and be organized and prepared for every night.
I know they cannot play at a 3-1 level the rest of the year, but look, they're doing fine.
I'm rooting for my man.
And by the
Here's
way,
the other thing they can't do, put yet another coach in. So this is what you got.
I don't have four of like anything really in 18 months. Credit JB though, because he ran out the triple big Kevin Love, Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson lineup the other day against Miami, which is like against every direction the NBA is going in. And it worked, and he did it again last night, and it worked again. Sometimes you just got to ride what's hot. Good for him.
There you go. And by the way, they gave him the coaching title, not the interim tag. Coach, so this is a little different than the other three jobs that we put up there.
I know we already did jump recommends. I'm going to give you two more recommendations. One, J.B. Bickerstaff interview with Mark Spears on Undefeated. Two, Vinny Goodwill about black coaches in the NBA on Yahoo Sports. Read both of those. That'll explain a lot.
There you go. All right, Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
We appreciate it. You stay with us. We will be back. We're going to talk about Ja Morant facing his hoop hero, Russell Westbrook, last night. So Ja says Russ is highly disrespected by the fans and the media. We'll discuss. First, though, it's time for our second distant replay of the day.
What is this
one, this date, 2005.
Okay.
Take a look, guys.
Oh, there. Yep. By the way, Dennis Smith Jr. had a play almost exactly like that against Charlotte the other night. It was the last night. Split the double, go up there and dunk.
It's two bouncy guys. Ooh, franchise. Just will not be denied.
The Jump is presented by Michelin Silicone Wiper Blades. Designed for extreme performance and lasts two times longer.
Our NBA Sunday special features LeBron, AD, and the Western Conference leading Lakers taking on Zion and the Pelicans. A little rematch from the other night. Our coverage tips of the NBA Countdown, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN. All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. LeBron James out with a sore groin versus the Warriors. This is just the third game he's missed all season. LeBron coming off a season-high 40-point effort on Tuesday. So I don't know if he was feeling it a little bit during the play on the floor. I don't know if it was the red vines and maybe he pulled something going to eat the red vine. I don't know. Or if it's just that maybe they looked at the Warriors game and thought, if you're going to get him a rest game, this could be one. What do you think?
I mean, just think about what you said, though. He's only missed three games on the season.
Yes.
At this age and has that many minutes logged. Mm-hmm. This is important to this guy that he ends up making an impact on his team and putting them in the best situation.
Did he hurt his groin on that dunk on Josh Hart?
Oh.
Poor Josh Hart.
I can't.
Josh, you're not the only one on the phone. He got a lot of bodies.
I thought they were going to need to go retrieve Josh Hart from Las Vegas. He got blown all the way over to Nevada after that one. Jazz fans apparently not over it. Gordon Hayward left in 2017.
I love
people.
It.
This was his second game back in Salt Lake City. Remember, he was injured, all of that. He had that terrible injury.
You would think
maybe that would be some sympathy. Nope.
Mercilessly
on every touch. Fans even booed Enes Kanter, who was traded away 5 years ago.
Enes loves that.
Right?
Yeah.
Does Utah have the saltiest fans in the league, guys?
I can't even rank them anymore. Everyone seems to be salty, but Kanter at least deserves it because he talked trash on the way out.
Right.
Gordon Hayward, at least he was nice about it.
Enes loves that attention. Give it to him. He can take it. Think about that. That's some serious fans there. They're going to hold a grudge for that long.
I just want to shout out our producer for getting salty in a question about a team that plays in.
Yeah.
There go. 4 years ago today, Mike Breen, take it away.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry with 0.6 seconds remaining.
I mean, do you remember where you were when Steph hit the shot?
Not only do I remember, but in the weeks leading up to that, they were talking about Steph in practice routinely takes shots from 40 feet out and hits them with ease. And they asked him, why don't you shoot it in the game? And he said, I don't know how everyone would react. It might blow everyone's mind. So when he pulled up there, I was like, oh, my God, he's about to do it. He has plenty of time. Like, he's doing it on purpose. And he hit that shot. And that's when a new era in the NBA was ushered where shooting threes doesn't mean at the three-point line.
The nerve of him. I mean, can you believe this guy steps over half court and let it go? But I'm telling you, guys like that, that's going to change the rule. We're going to need a four-point line at some point.
Well, that's funny. So I knew this highlight was coming up. And in my head, I had extended him, like, right at the half-court line or something. And I watched it, and I was like, oh, he's actually more in front of it than I thought, but it's because that has become normalized.
Exactly.
What he just did, Damian Lillard tosses those off.
Trae Young,
all these guys. I had to remember, as you said, it wasn't a thing people did. It was the kind of thing where coaches would scream, bad shot, bad shot, bad shot.
You can't go under on the screen anymore.
No.
You got to fight over on everyone.
No such thing as under.
It just speaks to watching the highlights speaks to me about how much things have changed.
And 4 years.
Become normal.
Last night, one of the top point guards of the future made sure to compliment an elite point guard of the present. Ja Morant told our Tim McMahon about Russell Westbrook before the Grizzlies played the Rockets, quote, I still feel like he is highly disrespected. People take his play for granted. I mean, he averaged a triple-double for the last 3 or 4 years. I just love he still goes out, plays, handles his business, doesn't worry about it. Westbrook was asked about what Ja said after the game, which means it's time for some straight talk sound.
Here's
Russ.
I don't really care what nobody else thinks about my game. I appreciate guys like him and other guys, but as long as I'm okay, I'm satisfied with what I do and bring to the table, I'm going to keep busting everybody and then we'll figure it out after that.
All right, so, I mean, is Ja right about Westbrook?
Highly disrespected.
What do you think, Coach?
I think we take it for granted. I think we take for granted that we got a guy who year in and year out is doing historic stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, to get that many triple-doubles, he has 8 this year. I think we've gotten spoiled and gotten used to it and we just lost Kobe, obviously not too long ago. And if there's any other player that I see that plays with that type of just all in 48 minute effort, that's always leaving it on the court, it's a Russell Westbrook. And, I do think that sometimes we get a little spoiled.
A little spoiled. Highly disrespected though. Highly?
I mean, he won an MVP, right? So that is one little thing. It's the media who votes for MVP. So if he was highly disrespected by the media, he probably would not have won MVP. But I will say that I think that sometimes we don't appreciate all the different things he brings to a team. And that sometimes some of the things that are glaring faults, like, hey, there was a long stretch of time he was taking too many three-point shots, that becomes the only narrative about him. When he does so many other things so well, he is a freight train going to the basket. And the athleticism he has maintained even after surgeries, I think, is very impressive.
Amazing.
Want to give Get Better Soon wishes to Kelly Oubre. Torn meniscus. That is rough for him
Suns.
Get well soon.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow, we'll be talking to James Harden. Tune in. See you then.